In brightest day,
in blackest night.
Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and hear the lamentation of your women.
Welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that champions the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio, and we're podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. I am Walter Duraglia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I am Chris Owen, Professor of Comic History at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And as always, we are your super soldiers.
Smashing Nazis through the world of comic books.
Yes!
Yes!
Chris, you know, nothing sells like Nazis.
It really doesn't, eh? You know, Nazis always seem to... They get a bad rap, but they're great for sales.
Yeah, you know what? They always got great a bad rap.
Yeah, great for sales.
Great for sales, though.
You know who else is great for sales?
Who?
Our very own Vincent Marchesano is here today with us. And he is, of course, a local comic book artist. I guess he's still an artist. Once an artist, always an artist. But
yes.
You know, he doesn't really do a whole lot these days. But, of course, he did.
That's what his wife says.
Hey-o! Anyways, we're glad to have him on the show. He is an artist who used to draw Batman and Fantastic Four back in the 70s. And we're very happy to have him on our show today. Vince, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I've never seen anybody mess up my first name.
You know
the
what?
Last name, yes,
I know,
but the first name, no.
It's not like I barely know you. I've known you for like 25 years.
That's what we do here. What we do here is we
He
hack
still
names.
Had hair, by the way, when I knew him.
That's a long time ago.
Right. Well, Vince, I'm sure you've listened to the show before. You've told me you have. And as always, we start the show by making fun of each other. And then we we head into New This Week. We pick at local comic book stops.
Oh.
At local comic book shops everywhere.
We haven't even had anything to drink yet.
I know, yet.
Yes.
New comics are arriving today, being Wednesday, and Chris and I like to pick a few and talk about them and just kind of give a sampling of the stuff that's hitting local comic book stores today.
Yes, and of course, New This Week is brought to you by Taskmaster Study Aids. Having trouble remembering Hamlet? Don't worry, and I will teach you the power of photographic reflexes to remember all the Shakespeare you need. Several competitive pricing packages are available, so call today.
Good. That is Taskmaster Study Aids.
Yes, he's very good at photographic memory type
right.
thing.
Right, just check the bottom of your screen for the toll-free number. All right, Chris, let's for New This Week.
Yes.
Obviously, Captain America is on everybody's mind. So let's talk about Red Skull Incarnate.
Yes. So, you know, I was flipping through this book before the show, and this is sort of like a younger, earlier origin of the Red Skull. It's like when he started out, when he was a kid kind of thing. So it's a really interesting read. It's of course, kind of kind of became who he is today kind of thing.
Right.
And, of course, the Red Skull is Captain America's arch nemesis.
Arch nemesis.
Yes.
Yes.
So really interesting book. It kind of reminded me of the X-Men First Class origin story of Magneto, how they went back and told, you know, how Magneto, what he was like when he was a little kid kind of thing, and how he was troubled and he had these powers.
Right.
And this is sort of like, you know, the Red Skull, who was Johann Schmidt when he was a little kid kind of thing, and how he became who he is today.
Johann Schmidt.
Yes.
Good.
So anyway, that's coming out from Marvel
wow.
this week.
Okay. Well, listen, I think it's Marvel's trying to obviously enhance the movie experience.
Yes.
For the pure fans that are going to come pick this up,
yeah.
They're going to walk in kind of having that extra background knowledge
of the character
Red Skull is.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, I'm going to ask our guest, Vince. Vince, have you – I know you're a big DC fan, and we'll get into DC a little bit later because I believe you have a few things to say.
I was a big Marvel fan.
Have you ever read Captain America?
Yes.
Yeah, and Red Skull, is he – a favorite?
Yeah, I think he was probably one of the most favorite characters that they brought back from the past.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, but like, well, okay, brought back from the past. They everybody's brought back. Captain America was brought back from the past.
Well, I like Red Skull. I thought it was a perfect character for Captain America, always has been.
Right, okay. So are you going to go see the movie?
I'll be there probably on opening day, just like Green Lantern.
Dressed up.
All right, I like it.
No, I'm not going to dress up.
Okay, let's move along here. We've got a lot to talk about.
Okay. Chris, I'm going to keep going here. I want to talk about Flashpoint. Batman Knight of Vengeance, number 2 of 3.
All right. So Batman Knight of Vengeance, number 2 of 3. This is a really interesting storyline. I just finished reading the second one. Really, wow, kind of a bit of a shocker ending. I don't want to give it away on the air.
Can I?
No, you cannot.
Oh, darn.
I will tell you that this is the storyline that's written by Brian Azzarello and drawn by Eduardo Rizzo, the guys that brought us 100 Bullets.
100 Bullets,
and,
of course.
And, you know, really great storyline. Now, this is, of course, part of the Flashpoint series, so it doesn't... I don't want to say it doesn't affect the current storyline because I don't know what the current storyline really is anymore.
Right, because you don't know what Flashpoint is.
I don't really know what Flashpoint is. I mean, I know what it is, but I don't know what it's going to become.
Right.
I don't know if this is the Batman that we're going to have as of the beginning of September, or I don't know if this is just sort of throwaway stories. I don't know. Like,
right.
No, because they're going to restart everything anyway, so I don't really know if this is it. Anyways, interesting storyline. It's got the Joker in it. There are some deaths. I don't want to tell you how it ends, but really interesting story.
Good. All right. So Batman Knight of Vengeance, number 2 of 3 at your local comic book shop. We got G.I. Joe, number 3, Cobra Civil War.
Yeah, you know what? I thought this was kind of interesting. This is the Cobra Civil War, so of course there's sort of like a dissension among the ranks sort of thing going on. And of course, G.I. Joe has been selling well since the 80s, and it's always been a very strong seller. And I think for a little while there, it was taken over by a couple of different companies that really didn't know what to do with the title, but IDW really has seemed to clue in onto what the fans want. And of course, it's a great creative team. We've got Chuck Dixon and Javier Salteras, and those are big names. Javier Salteras kind of broke through in Marvel back in doing Ghost Rider many years ago.
Right.
And Chuck Dixon, well, he's been around for a long time too.
I always wondered about G.I. Joe. I always wondered why a company like Marvel couldn't make it work, and a much, much smaller publisher like IDW can make it work.
Well, you know what's funny is I think Marvel made it work for a long, long time.
Yeah, they did.
But they had the right creative teams on it. But I think sometimes these smaller companies, they get these properties like G.I. Joe, and they like to think to themselves, hey, I have a really great idea of what I'd like to do with this storyline. And they kind of forget about what the fans would want and why the whole purpose of the comic exists kind of thing.
Right. All right. Let's keep moving, Chris.
All right.
Oh, very, very excited about Looney Tunes number 200.
Now, of course, this is part of our, every week, Walt and I have, we've started a kids pick of the week.
Oh, this is kids? Yeah, you're right. This is kids.
Looney Tunes, cartoon
no,
type thing.
I love Looney Tunes.
Does that make me an old kid?
Right, yes.
Yeah, pretty well, Vince. We're all old kids.
But the good thing about this one is it's now up to issue 200.
Yes.
That's a milestone for any comic book, let alone Looney Tunes. I mean, they've had Looney Tunes comics since the 50s.
Yeah, well, I think the old issues went above 200 for sure.
Yeah. So I think it's great that it's still going strong.
Looney Tunes, I think, went into the 40s.
Into the 40s?
Started started in the 40s with Dell, didn't they?
They went sequentially well into the 60s, I believe.
Yeah.
But it's great. I mean, I'm looking at the cover. You have everybody. You have Porky Pig, Yosemite Sam, Foghorn Leghorn, Pepe Le Pew, Roadrunner. I mean, the kids, I would love to find out who's reading Looney Tunes.
Yes.
That's what it is. Are our parents buying it for kids? Are kids picking it up themselves?
Or are guys like our age buying it?
Just buying it.
Because it's just sort of fun.
Drinking heavily and reading this.
No.
Yes.
Oh, that Foghorn Leghorn.
I'm just going to hold on. Let me get my six.
There are characters. Yeah. We probably buy them for our kids and our grandkids.
Hoping that they'll read them and then...
Yeah, hopefully they'll read them. But I think they'd rather read SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yeah, you'll probably find out that they're using them as coasters or something like that. And in fact, they actually want to read SpongeBob.
For their Kool-Aid.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Chris, that is going to finish, or that's going to end industry news, and we'll segue into some really
absolutely,
fine
and of
music.
Course, you know what? Nothing says Looney Tunes like a little bit of the old Conan music. We'll be right back.
Yes. What is good in life? Violins.
By Crumb.
By Crumb. Violins.
Drums that go on for forever.
And ever. Of course, great, Chris. I don't know how you do it. You're a talisman, a magician.
A talisman.
Yes.
Isn't a talisman great, like an idol or something,
Chris,
like that?
Chris, don't stop me right
sorry,
now.
Sorry, sorry.
Right. Okay. A great segue into industry news. And we have our special guest, Vince, reading our industry news sponsor.
Industry news is brought to you by the Superhero Mustache. Whether under an iron suit or out in full view while casting magic, a super stash is just what you need to improve your superhero cred. Villains respect the stash.
Oh, wow. Yes. Absolutely, yes.
Yes, I love
always
it.
Always got to respect the stash.
Respect the stash. Yes. Great job, Vince. We might actually get paid from that sponsor.
I doubt it, but you never know.
All right.
All right.
Chris, okay, let's head into industry news.
Yes.
And
we got lots to talk about today.
Yeah. It's yours and mine faux pas,
yes,
last week for leading into Canada Day. We wanted to do a feature on Canadian superheroes.
Yes, and we didn't.
We ran out of time.
You know, I personally was thinking about all the Canadian things I had to do on the weekend.
Right.
You know,
right.
I had to buy some poutine.
Yes.
I had to go.
I had the back bacon.
Yes.
They were going to sell out at
and Molson Canadian.
Canadian
of course.
Tire.
Yes.
And
and I had to buy some coffee at Tim Hortons.
Right.
Yes.
Yes. And you know, and thankfully I got all those things done. And hockey tape, was on sale at Canadian Tire.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
And
yeah, that's great.
And so we thought we would cover it.
Don't forget, you know, the penicillin or insulin. No, insulin. Sorry,
insulin.
Yeah, insulin was great.
Chris, you know what? We almost got out of it. Well, like,
I know, I had to
boring people, and then you just killed that whole routine.
I thought I'd just keep on going.
All right. A minute, it was penicillin.
No, I think it was insulin, wasn't it?
Insulin too, but I think it was penicillin too.
Oh. I think Vince remembers back when they invented it.
Yeah.
Hey, so let's count down on Comic Book Daily. Ed Campbell listed his five favorite Canadian superheroes,
right?
I guess. And I have question number five, Scott Pilgrim, because to me he's not a superhero.
He does fight the seven exes of his girlfriend, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
to win her hand,
Know. So does that not make him kind of a bit of a hero?
I guess.
You know. Okay. I think it's kind of it's a stretch, but I'll give it to him.
All right. Number four, I like the
Guardian,
otherwise known as the Vindicator or Weapon Alpha.
He
led that
I thought Guardian and Vindicator were two different people, but
I'm sorry, the Guardian, Vindicator,
or Weapon Alpha.
Or
Weapon
Alpha.
I see what you're saying.
Sorry,
right, okay.
Misquote.
Okay,
please don't quote me. Alpha Flight,
right?
There's a good Canadian.
Yes, game. Absolutely, I agree with that.
The only part I hated about during Civil War, there was some. No, it wasn't Civil War. Secret Invasion.
Yeah, yeah.
Secret Invasion. The setup to Secret Invasion is that the somebody's coming down.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, the first guy, the first team that gets offed.
Yeah, is
Alpha.
The entire team.
Yeah,
gets offed.
Like just without even
like
the
a
guy
throwaway.
Blinking.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, they couldn't possibly be any good at what they do because
right.
They're Canadian.
Because they're Canadian.
Yeah. What's up with that? I agree.
Yeah, anyway, yeah. So it's nice to see the Guardian on the list.
Yeah.
Number three, the Deadpool.
The Deadpool.
Well,
not just Deadpool. Deadpool.
Deadpool.
Wasn't that a Dirty Harry movie, The Deadpool?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it was. It was a Dirty Harry movie, yep.
So let's say that it's just Deadpool, not The Deadpool.
Deadpool. Right. Great Canadian superhero.
Yeah, you know,
Wisecracker.
Yes, he is. I didn't realize that he was a Canadian until, actually, his Marvel bio says that he was born in, quote-unquote, an unrevealed location in Canada.
East End Hamilton.
I think so. Yes. I think so. Somewhere along Burlington Street.
Right. And, of course, number two, Captain Canuck.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's hard to find a hero that's more Canadian than Captain Canuck.
Right, and that's why I think he should have been number one.
Has-been. You know, you got to give it to the old knucklehead, number one, Wolverine.
Wolverine.
Yeah, Wolverine. You know, he is proudly Canadian, proudly an X-Man, you know, probably one of the most popular Marvel characters out there. Obviously is, if not the most popular. Maybe Spider-Man would be more popular.
Right.
But, you know, like, I don't know if I would still consider him. I still got to think that, you know, Captain Canuck holds up the Canadian values more
That's
than
right.
Wolverine does,
That's right?
Right?
Captain Canuck, after he punches a guy out, he apologizes.
That's right.
Look, I'm sorry, sir.
Sorry, sir.
Sorry, sir. Yeah, I'm just doing my duty.
Yeah, I didn't mean to do this. May I get the door for you?
Yeah, my civic
yeah, but
duty.
Okay, but hold on a second here. Are these the only five that we can come up with? Like, I mean, how about, like, there's got to be other Canadian heroes.
You know, when you guys started talking about Canadian heroes, you started mentioning this stuff. I was thinking Johnny Canuck, the Penguin, Nirvana,
yeah, well,
you know,
that's
Doc
good.
Stern,
yeah,
know,
these
all the real Canadian superheroes.
These are all valid.
Wolverine isn't a Canadian superhero anymore. He just happens to be Canadian that did like a lot of other Canadians and became U.S. citizens.
But, see, that's a good point, Vince.
Wolverine shouldn't count.
Wolverine is a superhero that happens to be Canadian.
Yeah.
Captain Canuck, Johnny Canuck are Canadian superheroes.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, and don't forget my Captain Canada from back in the 60s that I
yes,
had.
Yes, Vince has created a character
yes,
called
Captain Canada. Which
right.
was pretty popular but at the time.
At the time.
No one else had a Captain
Canada.
Did
anybody buy that comic?
Yes, actually, we did quite well.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. It went in second printing.
Oh.
And,
second
you
printing?
Know, yeah.
Wow.
So
yeah.
wait, like, now
I mean, when you only do 50 issues, another 50
say,
issues.
Yeah.
Is this photocopies in your basement? Or?
No, actually, this was at, oh, God, here we go, the old guys here. Captain George Henderson printed the first, our very
oh,
first
yeah,
issue
yeah, very
in
first
his shop at Memory
Canada
Lane.
From
yeah.
Yes,
Toronto, yeah.
yes. We were considered, I think, we were actually the very first Canadian fanzine.
Oh, interesting.
It was Comic Canada.
Okay. Now, Captain Canada, did he have superpowers, is my question.
Yes, but you know, darned if I remember.
Oh, come on!
Right.
Come on!
I just came up with him, but you know, years ago. But I can't remember everything
right.
that he had.
Okay.
He was really, you know, obviously a Captain America, you know,
rip
extended
off.
To Canada.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I got one more question about this, and then we'll leave it.
Okay.
The question I have is: like, should Superman be on this list?
That's a good question.
Technically speaking,
you know,
Superman was originally a Canadian because he was in the Toronto in the Daily
he,
Star.
He was in Metropolis,
Toronto
right? right?
Well, no, in Toronto.
Metropolitan Toronto.
Yes.
But that's what they made
yes.
Metropolis.
Yep. So well, basically, you know, I mean, even Canada under the Canadian Heritage, those little clips that they used to show on CBC, they made a point of, you know, pointing out that Superman was Canadian.
Right.
It's just that it sold in the U.S., so he became
American.
So I'm
American.
Just wondering, like, yes. you know, is it should really, should he, maybe he should be number one.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm just saying.
Point.
I'm
all
just
right,
saying.
There we go.
Okay.
We are flooring, what do you call when you floor something? A preposition? No.
Proposal? We're putting forth a proposition that Superman.
Yes. Thank that, you so much for saving
and
me, Vince.
I'll throw this in, and maybe you can think about it. I think who was it? The Schuster and Siegel family own the original Superman now, the first
they do,
issue.
That's right, that's
so
right.
That means if they really wanted to, they could bring back Superman to his original roots and make him our Canadian superhero.
That's
and
true.
He would be our prime superhero for all of Canada.
Put a big, rather than an S in the middle, put a big beaver in the middle.
Beaver Man?
Yeah.
I think
Superman.
Mad did that
you know,
once.
The big beaver, like big bucks going out at you.
Wouldn't we all like to have a big beaver on our chest?
Right. Okay, Chris.
All
hello.
Right. So let's keep on moving along
here.
Let's
keep on moving.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, Chris, I know this one. You found this one on the internet.
So this is – oh, what? Did you skip a page here on me? Hold on a second here. I thought we were going to do Marvel and DC.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. I did skip a page.
Yeah, okay.
We'll wait for the one that you found next.
Sure,
for
okay.
next. Now, here's one from Comic Book Daily that our producer, Anthony Falcone, wrote about, which was Marvel mocking DC's new relaunch.
Yes.
So as we all know, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, DC's relaunching 52 new titles in September, blah, blah, blah. Marvel, in the new preview solicitation, previews is, of course, the monthly rag that
rag.
Well, that's what you, that's the term in the industry that you call
right,
it.
Right, okay.
That people order out of. So, you know, you order 2 months in advance out of, you know, previews comes in July. That means the books are shipping in September. So anyway, the covers for the Marvel titles, they have the numbers on them, and they're kind of mocking the relaunch by saying still number 527 still
exactly,
number
yeah.
whatever like they're not relaunching.
As if to say that they've never relaunched anything.
Right. Well, that's the funny part. Like when you see New Avengers, still number 11.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Which is a comic that started, what, year 1969?
Right. Yeah. No, Avengers started in 63,
right. Sorry.
But
63.
But like still number 11. Well, that means you launched it a year ago.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
Right? So it's odd that Marvel, the kings of relaunches,
yeah,
would actually dare.
Yeah, to make fun of somebody else for relaunching a title.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, how many times has Marvel done it? Like, it's a ridiculous amount.
Marvel has a tradition of spoofing things that DC did, and that goes way back to the early 70s, late 60s,
yeah,
with Brand X, remember?
Yeah,
they used to always pick on DC.
Stupor Man, remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so basically this is just an extension of that.
Yeah, it's sort of a modern day of making fun of them.
Yeah.
Now, here's my question, because I'm looking at Marvel's response to DC's relaunch. Now, guys, here, follow me on this. In the comic world in New York City of Marvel and DC, is there industrial espionage going on? And did Marvel learn about this DC change too late to kind of maybe react in their own way a little bit? It seems like, you know, the news is a month old, and now you're seeing the first salvo from Marvel.
Right.
And it's as lame as mocking it on a thing. Like, is there like a, like, you know, in the hallways of New York City offices, is there like a deep throat? Is there a guy you're meeting in the washroom stand and going, yeah, they're launching a relaunch?
There's a restaurant between the two of them.
Right? I didn't tell you anything.
I didn't tell you anything. And, you know, rather than a cash drop off, like, they're dropping off some, like, I don't know, like,
scripts of comics.
Old comic books or something like that. Or maybe, you know, like tickets to Turn Off the Dark or something. Something like that. But is there industrial espionage going on? Should insiders in Marvel, did they know about this DC move well before it was in the works?
I'm sure they must have. I'm sure there must be somebody out there who wanted to contact Marvel. Maybe their price was too high. Maybe Marvel didn't want to pay up.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know,
that's good. It just seems that Marvel is reacting to it the same way we're reacting to it. And it seems to me that if Marvel knew about this months in advance, like, say, half a year ago, which I'm sure it was in the works then.
Oh, I'm sure.
I don't know. Marvel would have positioned itself a little bit better.
This is nothing new. I'm sure this has been in the works for at least a year and a half, something like that. This is nothing new. So,
right.
All right, let's keep on going here. So this is this next story here. This is interesting. So, of course, we have in New York, we've got Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. Well, The much more popular play / musical that's occurring in England right now is the Batman Live play that's going on. And, of course, this is begins in Manchester this month. It had played a few pre-opening shows, but now the grand opening is in Manchester this month.
And it's not really, though, a play as much as it is a circus kind of thing?
It's kind of like a circus, yeah. It's kind of odd.
Like live
acts with acrobatics and stuff like that. But there's singing, and there's, like, it's not really a play. It's just sort of like a Cirque de Batman, I guess, is the best way of saying it. I don't know. There's all kinds of characters. But, I mean, it's great because they've actually given a whole rundown of all the different characters as well. And I don't want to go through all of them.
Let's go through
a couple here.
Are the Flying Graysons in there?
The Flying Graysons are not in it.
They should be, though.
It would be perfect.
On the trapeze act.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that's a good point, Vince.
But here's some of the profiles of some of the characters. We've got Catwoman. She is like a cat in attitude as well as appearance. Whatever you expect her to do, she'll do just the opposite.
Rare.
Exactly. Robin is lively, energetic, and lives on the edge of life. The Riddler is a riddle wrapped in enigma, leaving a clue for Batman.
Yes.
And of course, we've got Harley Quinn and the Joker. The Joker is, beyond good and bad, there is evil. Beyond evil, there is insanity. And beyond insanity, there's the Joker.
Yes.
And of course, Harley Quinn, who is her his sidekick / love interest. Harley Quinn, it's written, hell hath no fury like an insane woman in love spurned by a psychopath.
Nice.
Yes. So what I'm really looking forward to here is, of course, we have our intrepid reporter in London, England, merry old England.
I say,
Mr. Daniel Champion. We're hoping that he will check out the show and report back to us as to how good the show is, or how, you know, preferably how good and not how bad.
Right now, Mr. Champion.
Yes, I say.
He will find. I believe you told me that you sent him two tickets to the premiere,
all
expenses paid, Comic Culture. So, Mr. Champion, when you do receive those, please, we're looking for your report. Hopefully we'll get you live on the air through a Skype or something like that, and we can get the whole scoop on this great, great feature.
Yes, that would be fantastic. Hopefully he can report back to us, letting us know how it is.
All right. Chris, here's a cool story. Bigby Comics up in Hamilton, my store, obviously.
Yep.
We have a customer. I'm just going to call him Sean.
Okay.
Okay. And he emailed us all excited.
Yes.
And, you know, usually our customers are excited.
Well, because it's a great store. But anyways,
yeah. Great comic books. Yeah. They come in every Wednesday or Thursday and pick up their new stuff. But apparently he knows Ibrahim Robertson, who's drawing the Uncanny X-Men right now.
Right, right.
And I guess they know each other, they're buddies or something like that. And it ends up that Ibrahim drew Sean in a panel.
Yeah.
On the last panel on page 17 of X-Men 539, people. So X-Men 539, page 17, last panel. You're going to see that gentleman that's turning toward us. That is Sean, regular customer at Bigby Comics in Hamilton, yeah, Ontario, and his buddy drawing him in. And he was all excited, and in his email to us, he says, "How many people can say they have been killed by Wolverine?" And then in quotes, he goes, "Well, actually, quite a few."
But how many real people?
How many real people can say that?
Yeah, exactly. So I think this is fantastic. Yeah. You know, this is the kind of stuff that really energizes the industry, in my opinion. You know, gets people alive and interested in it again. You know, but I'm sure Vince. Now, I'm sure. Did you ever do stuff like that when you were drawing Batman and Fantastic Four and that kind of stuff? Did you ever include your friends or include yourself in any issues like that?
We try to, sometimes in names, sometimes in a drawing. It works out, you know, it works out pretty good. Some people enjoy that. And like I said, sooner or later, we're going to put Chris in as some, you know, as Lex Luthor in some comic.
Excellent.
Excellent. All right.
Excellent.
Well, listen, if that doesn't scream a musical interlude, I don't know what does. So here's a little bit of the old Fantastic Four TV show.
Yes, Chris. You know, what's great about themes from comic book stuff is you can tell when they were produced.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that smells of like late 80s.
Absolutely, yeah. And early 90s.
It smells like, you know, Jefferson Airplane made it. Jefferson Starship made it. Like, I think we played that once before, and it was right after the take of We Built This City. And like, let's keep this thing rolling. This is good stuff here. We got a gem. And lo and behold, Fantastic Four.
Absolutely, yeah. Right.
Every time I hear these kind of jingles, the first, as soon as it started playing, the first thing that came into my mind was Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
Because that's what
Charlie Sheen.
Well, because on the show, he writes this kind of stuff, right, and they always make fun of it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're always making fun of it. And right away, I just see him sitting there at his piano coming up with a tune like this.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jack Kirby would be rolling in his grave if he heard this kind of stuff.
Right. I think Sheen is the one laughing for getting paid at something.
True enough.
All right, Chris, let's keep moving on with industry news. Oh, we have industry news. We got to keep going on with this section of industry news.
Yes.
The Phantom Zone, now accepting pets and children that misbehave.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
The Phantom Zone. That's not the zone that was for the like Superman and all, like the Krypton. Sorry, like the Kryptonians.
Is that what that was?
Yeah,
it's the Krypton Jay. It's the Krypton Penitentiary.
Do you remember in Superman 2 when they had, you know, the Phantom Zone that was like
that's floating
in outer space?
Oh, I get it.
And then or General Zod came out and.
You guys are making me feel old.
It's
the Phantom Zone. Everybody knows who that is.
All right.
Or what that is.
I'm just saying.
It's all coming together now, guys. All right.
We're going to put Chris there.
Let's talk about Thor. Let's talk about the sequel has been set.
Yes.
So they're planning a July release, 2013. They're getting this kid, Chris Hemsworth, to play Thor again.
Right.
But Kenneth Branagh is not direct.
He's not going to direct. No, right. But apparently he's going to have a producing role in it.
Right.
Which I think is good because, you know, that means that he's still going to have a bit of his touch. It might be a little bit of a different look to it, but he'll still have his overall kind of feel, I hope, anyways, because he had that sort of regal, really majestic feel in his movie. And I think that he will still make sure that that continues in the movie, even though the next director may maybe make it a little darker or a little bit lighter or something like that. There'll still be the overall feel of it will still be there with his being the producer.
Right, right. And they've picked already this guy named Don Payne, who will do the, I guess, screenplay for it. So this Don Payne guy helped write the screenplay for this Thor.
Right.
So now they've kind of liked his work, and they're picking him. So definitely full steam ahead for Thor that I think has grossed worldwide close to $440 million so far.
Yeah, that's awesome, yeah.
And so it'll hit $500 million.
Yeah.
And then it'll go into DVDs.
Where it'll make even more money.
It will make even more money.
Yeah.
And so that's great, great news for Thor, great news for Marvel comic properties,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, this is awesome.
All right. On the same, I guess, vein here, Transformers opened up last weekend to the best, I guess, opening this year for a movie.
Yeah.
It wasn't a comic book movie, which maybe is surprising because everybody thought either X-Men or Thor or
Green Lantern
or something might be the big movie of the year in terms of opening, but it was Transformers, really a toy franchise that was a comic book, but that is the biggest
movie. Yeah, it was toys, cartoons, comic books,
it
was everything, and now it's a worldwide phenomenon in movie sales, and it's doing extremely well. Now, the one thing I do got to say, these numbers, the weekend gross for Transformers was just over $97 million, and the total gross is $162 million, now, which sounds weird because it's only been open for it only started last weekend, but really, it opened last Tuesday. It opened a week ago.
Right,
Tuesday midnight. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, it's really...
It includes Monday, too, by the way. It includes Monday because Monday was the 4th of July in the States, so they included that.
Six
days.
Right.
So it's really a six-day take.
So the numbers as far as the weekend gross, it's a little bit of a skewed number there because it included the Monday, anyways.
Right. Now, the interesting thing on the list of the weekend box office numbers that we get off the internet here was at number 7 was Green Lantern with $6 million plus, topping its total gross to $101 million.
Yeah.
That is a massive disappointment. It's third or fourth week, and it's just hitting $100 million right now.
Yeah.
I think it cost a couple hundred million to make.
It cost $200 million.
Right, and I think they invested 50 to 80 or something in the marketing for it.
Yeah.
You're looking at $300 million just to, get close to breaking even.
Keep in mind, though, that's the North America
figure,
not worldwide.
But I don't think Green Lantern is doing that well.
It's doing well. A lot of if you see the Spectator from Tuesday, you'll see just how much the European market outgrosses North America now, and Green Lantern's doing a little bit better over there.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's good
to know.
Yeah. That's good news.
Well, now last week was it last week or 2 weeks ago? They did announce that there was going to be a Green Lantern sequel. Now, I was talking to a friend of mine who was sort of in the know of these things. And he says that he'd be really surprised that they would announce that. But he also said sometimes what the movie studios do is they'll announce, even though the movie's not doing that well, they'll announce the fact that it's going to have a sequel because then they'll kind of con people into thinking that, it must be that good that it's going to have a sequel.
Right. So
even though it might not be doing that well, they'll say, we're actually going to have a sequel, and then maybe that might not ever.
So it doesn't cost anything to make the announcement, but they can milk 10, 15 more million out of box office.
That's good for them.
And don't forget that they did put in the extra footage after the credits with Sinestro putting on the yellow ring in the movie. For those of you who didn't stay to see that, you should have, because he becomes the yellow Green Lantern, which opens it easily, of course, for a sequel, which would make it a much better movie, probably.
Right.
Origin movies are not always the best way to gauge a movie.
I think that occurs almost every movie. Usually the origins are it seems to me like you got to get the origins almost out of the way in order to tell the good story about what these characters are all about. Yeah. But having said that, it's not always true because I really enjoyed X-Men First Class. I thought it was a great movie.
Right.
So,
All right. Okay, let's talk. We'll move on before we hit our big continuation of the DC number ones. We have Vince with us here, and Vince, first of all, thanks for being on the show again. And I do want to talk a little bit about the comic books. You were explaining to Chris and I before the show started about you ghosting, being a ghost artist back in the 70s in comic books. And that intrigues me to no end. So, I mean, just in a nutshell, tell us what ghosting, being a ghost artist.
Does that mean you put like a sheet on over your head or something? Like
cut out
eyeballs and you know.
We might as well for the recognition you get.
Oh!
some artists, there's two kinds of artists. As we all know, the most famous ghosts were the Batman artist, Jerry Robinson.
Okay, well, what is a ghost? What is a
ghost? A ghost artist, Bob Kane created Batman, but he never really drew it. It was Robinson and the other guys. It's artists who imitate the style as close as possible of the actual artist. In my case, I did Rich Buckler. I went to him. I didn't draw anything like him. But I did a series of exercises with him, saw how he drew, studied it, and next thing I know, I'm drawing like him. It got to the point that I could draw like him so well that when I went to a comic book convention with him, he would be drawing sketches and signing them. When he had to go to the washroom and decide to take a break, I stayed behind and I would draw the same sketches and sign his name to them. And no one knew the difference.
Thank you so much. Oh, you're welcome.
I love your work on Batman. Yeah.
Exactly. So the ghost basically helps the actual artist. It's a time-honored tradition. The companies don't want to admit it, but they all know that it goes on.
Right.
Because a lot of artists, they can't get they can't finish all the books that they're doing.
So hold on. You're saying it still goes on?
It still goes on, of course.
So there's somebody photoshopping Greg Land work. Is that what you're saying?
They're not photoshopping it. They're breaking it down in the style. Myself, I have this little skill of being able to imitate other artists when I get down to working it.
Right.
So I could probably do it for a lot of others. With Rich, it taught me a lot. And most ghosts really are doing it today, especially. Not so much in the beginning because they were doing it for money. Nowadays, most of the ghosts don't really get paid. Some artists will pay them like Wally Wood. But it's a way of learning.
Now, okay, I got a question for you here. Now, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. No. But now, ghosting back in the 70s had to have been way easier than doing it today, because back in the 70s you had all kinds of style guides, and this is the way the character looked. You had to make sure that Batman's cowl, like his ears, were a certain length, and Wonder Woman's emblem and bustier looked a certain way, and all that kind of stuff. But now it seems to me that there's all that the styles of all the different artists are so crazy, and so such a myriad of different styles, it would be hard, much harder to have ghosts for all these different styles of artists. And maybe I'm wrong. What do you think?
No, not really. I mean, keep in mind, when I did the pages for Batman, for Rich's Batman looked nothing like the usual Batman.
Okay.
It looked more like a Marvel character, and I think that's what they were trying to do. My style, when I drew it, looked a lot different. Because it was one of the first things I did with him before I developed it. And you can actually tell there's a difference. When Bernie Wrightson inked it, which I'm really proud of,
right,
he brought it all together.
Hold on. So you're saying did Bernie Wrightson inked your stuff?
Yeah.
So now, for those of you who don't know, Bernie Wrightson is sort of a very famous comic artist.
Yeah, one of the pillars of the Bronze Age of the 60s and 70s.
Worked on,
and he's still working.
Right? No, absolutely. Swamp Thing would be his famous work.
He did a lot of books for horror books and House of Secrets, House of Mystery, that kind of thing.
Most of these people who become ghosts start off as simple page erasers or inking in blacks. And at the same time, they're sort of watching the artist and studying how he does things. To draw like Rich Buckler's hands, I went home and I did pages and pages of redrawing the same hands in his style until I captured it. And that's what a lot of these guys do. They'll start off a certain way, doing menial things, and eventually they pick up and the artist gets too many jobs, and he doesn't want to turn them down. So he'll get them to start inking the blacks. Then they'll start putting in the buildings. Then they'll do, like, the background figures. Rich had what he would do with most of my stuff if I didn't quite do the face like him. He'd come along, and he'd add a few lines into it, right. A few wiggly lines here and there so it would look like his. So when it went in, it looked like, right. You know, it was his, right. Stuff. Okay. When Joe Sinnott inked the Fantastic Four, he brought it together, and it looked like, you know, a regular Fantastic Four. You couldn't tell who did what.
Right.
And
right. Now, you did work for Batman. I think issue 265 was your work. And Fantastic Four was 161, 162.
I think there was three issues.
Yeah.
I think,
yeah. Could have been 160 as well.
Yeah.
Now, for fans, if anybody has those comic books, leaf through it, you'll notice in the storefront, the window will say Vince's, you know, Deli or something,
yeah.
Like that. That's Vinny trying to put his name in the book.
And in one of those issues, when there was supposed to be this huge army, okay, I didn't leave out all the little figures, okay? That was Joe Sinnott who left them out because he didn't want to ink all the huge army that I drew.
Right.
But he did put a lot of scales on a Tyrannosaurus that I drew that we didn't put in.
So now, when you were – no, of course you did Batman, you did Fantastic Four. What other books did you work on?
I worked on Deathlock, Hop created.
From Astonishing Tales? Like
Deathlock. First coming
That's
out.
That's funny because today, Vince, today, Back Issue Magazine, yeah. It stands today, and it features Rich Buckler's Deathlock. Now, you kind of helped Buckler develop that character,
yeah,
didn't
yeah.
you?
One of the things that we did that I orchestrated on that, on one of the first issues, we had the first time, actually, I think it was in the comic, we had 25 panels on one page.
What? That's crazy.
25 panels. They were all
so innovative.
Ones. Yeah.
Well, we were telling a story in small images. It was a big deal back in the 70s to be
right.
able to tell stories like that. It was Deathlock. I think
I did some stuff for Atlas Seaboard.
Yeah.
Right?
There was other Marvel stuff like Man God, which yep. we started.
The magazine.
Yeah. And it was originally a comic that became right. a magazine after. They took some of the pages we drew, and I can't remember who the artist was that took it over. And then there was also, remember the Atlas, which is coming back? Atlas Seaboard. They're coming
yeah.
back. And I was working on Planet of the Vampires as well on that one.
Right.
Okay.
Now you're, sorry,
go ahead.
Yeah. Vince mentioned to me earlier that he ghosted for the second to last and last issue. And then they liked his work. And the next issue was going to be by Vince Marchesano. And then yeah. the company went belly up.
Wah, wah, wah. I'm accursed.
I cursed the company.
Bring
your magic.
I got to ask you, Vince. So, you know, you've been around in the comic book industry for, you know, decades now. So what do you think of all the new comics that are coming out today? And what do you think of the whole DC thing? Do you still keep up on comics even? Like, you know, what are your thoughts?
Well, I basically got away from most Marvels, and I've been a big DC fan.
And your thoughts on the big DC
the big
change?
The big DC change for me is, I think for a lot of guys my age, is probably going to be a big disappointment. And I tell people, don't get us wrong. I don't think any of the older guys who've been collecting DC all these years, we don't think the art's going to be worse. We don't think the stories are going to be worse. What we don't like, I think, is how they're going to change the characters, how they're going to have this not superhero-ish, in the classic term of superhero.
Right.
I remember I stopped. I don't think I ever picked up the Marvel Ultimates, was it?
Yeah.
Because I came into the store once when they first came out, and in one of the, I think it was the first issue, I saw Captain America kicking a guy in the ground in the head, and I thought,
yeah.
you know what?
Yeah.
That's not what I want, and I never picked up a single issue of it. Superheroes meant something. Nowadays, the superheroes are darker. And for those who've seen the, I guess we can put a plug in for Comic Book Daily, there's a video online right now that shows a lot of the superheroes the way they look and if they're going to look. Like Superman having a much edgier costume. He's lost the red briefs. You can't have Superman without the red briefs. And, you know, having, I guess it's a Robin character with, like, claw-like wings, and they all look very savage.
Well, this is a good question. So here's a guy that's been collecting comic books for, you know, 40, 50 years. Sorry, I don't mean to date you there, Vince.
72 years.
You know, but I mean, really, and so this could possibly
since 56.
This could possibly mean that you may no longer buy DC comics anymore, and I'm sure you're not the only one.
No,
sure
the chances are already that I've made a decision that, on the whole, DC is something that I'm dropping. I will probably be picking up individual issues. More than likely, the individual issues will be the ones that have titles like I was hoping, like My Greatest Adventure, which I guess they're not doing. Some of those, maybe Weird Western because I like Jonah Hex, things like that. But as to seeing my heroes altered into something that are unrecognizable, they're not my heroes anymore. So, of course, I don't think I'm going to be as interested.
Can DC pull one of those New Coke things where they go and they make a New Coke and then all the old guys that love the classic Coke complain and then they go back and they make a classic Coke again?
But here's the thing. Like, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I mean, DC has done this sort of thing before with the Golden Age heroes. You know, they got rid of all the Golden Age heroes. They started the Silver Age heroes, and then everybody complained, so they brought the Golden Age heroes back. So there was, like, you know, the Earth 1 and the Earth 2. Could they be doing the same thing again with the DC universe as it is now?
I think that's what I meant by my Coke analogy.
I'm sorry. To bring it more to...
You made sense of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think you mentioned it earlier that we really don't know what's happening with Flashpoint. You have no idea. This whole thing with these number ones would be simple, a simple way to continue Flashpoint. And then if it doesn't work, maybe in 2 years' time, they can come back and say, oh, this was really a whole imaginary story. Now, since we finished the intermission, we'll go back to our original characters. And I think this is probably why Marvel's making fun of them, because Marvel's probably sitting back going, hey, if this works, we'll jump on board. If it doesn't work, we'll say, hey, see, we stuck it out.
Yeah.
We're the good guys. Come to us. The sales for Marvel, I think, for the older readers may go up because, you know, a lot of us might go back to some of those characters that
One last quick question before you go into the next musical interlude. Do you think that this is just a way of DC trying to create new properties in order to have greater merchandising and sales for other media things like movies, video games, all that kind of stuff? Are they creating stuff just for those particular markets?
I think so. I think they're taking a calculated risk because I don't think it's just about digital comics. They have to change it so that they can make their superhero movies geared towards the younger audience.
Right
now, they're gearing them towards a mixture of us. They need us older viewers because we know the characters. If they redo all these characters, they're going to come along in about maybe 2 years and revamp the whole movie line. There'll be a new Superman, and there'll be a new Batman.
Right.
I think all these number ones are all geared towards helping them do merchandising. The 52, of course, refers to the 52 universes that they've had, which leads you to believe that maybe it could be another universe, you know?
Right.
But I think all of this is – anything to do with comics nowadays is very important that it's merchandising. I think that's what DC wants, to make movies, to sell the new running shoes, to sell the new dolls and
patio
toys.
Patio furniture, whatever happens to
exactly.
You. All right. Well, listen, that if that doesn't just scream play Batman, I don't know what does.
Don't quit your store job.
Right.
All right. So listen, this again takes us to one of our we're gonna have to do in two more segments. We're gonna talk about do our yay or nay for the 52 comics that are coming out from DC.
Right. And of course, this next segment is brought to you by The Negative Zone. Join Vince in his DC.
You're stuck on that one, aren't you?
Yeah. Join Vince as he elaborates on the DC changes in the negative zone.
Right. All right.
His negative ideas belong in the negative zone.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
All right, let's keep going here.
All right, let's keep going. So one of the new – they've kind of subsectioned it. They've got, you know, the Superman titles. They've got the Batman titles. They've got the La 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 titles. Then they have the youth titles, like where all like the Young Justice and the Teen Titans are. And then they have this kind of little offshoot called the Edge. Sorry, the Dark.
The Dark.
The Dark. Now, the Dark would be a lot of things that the Vertigo line was doing, but now they're bringing into this 52U thing with DC.
Right, okay.
So let's talk about Justice League Dark number one.
Right. So we've got Justice League Dark number one, written by Peter Milligan and art by Mikael Janin.
So what would they do with Justice League Dark?
Like, well, they're going to have the Enchantress is going to be involved in it. And
so it's Justice League filled with kind of dark characters.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. Okay. So we're going to have like Shade the Changing Man, Madame Xanadu, characters that were probably a little darker in the Vertigo lineup, who probably were originally in the regular DC universe back in the 70s, which they made into the Vertigo characters, but now they want to bring them back into the mainstream. So we're not talking about characters like the Sandman, stuff like that, but more like Zatanna, John Constantine, who actually were originally not in the Vertigo sort of lineup kind of thing.
Right. Okay.
So I'm going to say yay for this one.
Well, yeah, Justice League, though. Justice League is going to carry it, and I think Justice League International, Justice League, Justice League Dark,
yeah.
They'll have a good run, I think. You're right. Okay. Let's go. Swamp Thing. Here's an old Vertigo favorite, the Swamp Thing.
Yeah. Again, written by Scott Snyder and art by Yannick Paquette, two very strong creators. I'm going to say yay for this one, too.
Definitely going to say yay.
Vince, what do you say?
I like Swamp Thing.
Well, Swamp Thing's got a great...
It's probably one of those that I may consider going with because it isn't part... You know, he was always that kind of a character.
Off to the side.
Yeah, right? You could make him nasty, you could make him good. He's not really a superhero, you know what I mean?
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
All right.
And you know, a history of Bernie Wrightson and Alan Moore didn't hurt the character either.
No. Actually, Adrian Barbeau, I think, helped you know, Swamp Thing more than anybody else.
Fair enough.
All right. Next one is Animal Man, written by Jeff Lemire with art by Travel Foreman and Dan Green. I like Dan Green. I'm not really too familiar with Travel Foreman, but I also really like, of course, Jeff Lemire, who is a good Canadian boy.
Jeff Lemire, local kid, Southern Ontario kid. Great talent. Yeah, Sweet Tooth, Essex County. Superboy work. Yeah, he's going to do well with this, I think.
I think
and Animal Man obviously was a great property set up in the 60s back in the Strange Adventure days, and then, of course, made famous by Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
And so the Animal Man has that kind of name that I think will sustain it for a while.
Okay, this next one I'm not so sure about. Frankenstein, Agent of Shade.
The superhuman advanced defense executive.
Yeah,
they dropped the creature commandos?
Apparently so. You know what? Again, written by Jeff Lemire, but art by Alberto Ponticelli. You know what? I don't know if even Jeff Lemire can save this one.
Yeah, well, the thing is, Jeff Lemire, I think that's his third book he's doing as part of this project.
Yeah.
So I see this as a drop off.
Yeah.
Now, Vince, I mean, you're up to date with. Guys like Werewolf, Frankenstein, Dracula, they're public domain characters, right? Anybody can use them?
Yeah, Frankenstein is a public domain character as long as you don't make him look like the universal character.
Right, Dracula?
Same thing. Vampires, werewolves.
Werewolves.
Yeah. Right. Only if you're using the style of the characters that belong to
like
Universal.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Otherwise, it's easy. It's free to use. It has name recognition, product recognition.
Right.
It could make a good movie.
Right. Now, the next one, lends to the next one, iVampire.
Now, of course, this was a semi-popular series back in the day. But you know what? I think what they're doing with this one is they're kind of Twilighting-ish a bit, you know, like they're making it very, like, you know, romantic.
Well, why wouldn't DC now vampires, or as my cousin Zelko would say, vampires? Vampires were like the thing for the last 6-7 years. Why wouldn't DC have pulled iVampire out during the whole Twilight thing and the whole Buffy thing and the whole thing.
Excellent
like that.
Question. I have no idea.
Now, you remember the old House of Mystery. Was it House of Mystery or House of Secrets? That had
House
that?
Of Secrets, House of Mystery.
Right.
Keep in mind that when DC has a proud tradition, unlike Marvel, of really planning their stories quite ahead. And the chances are they did I, Vampire when all the Twilight stuff came out. And it takes a while to fit it in.
Right.
It's, again, a good merchandising movie. Keeping in mind here that if people don't know, Warner Brothers owns DC.
Yeah,
right.
And
for
that
sure.
Warner Brothers wants properties.
Absolutely, yeah. And this is going to be all brand new properties for Warner Brothers.
I say Vampire makes it.
I say no. I say nay.
All right.
Next one, Resurrection Man by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning with art by Fernando De Niño.
So here's a
There's
guy
a
that
dead one.
Every time you kill him, he comes back and he has new powers.
Right. Now, this is an old storyline.
Right.
And I'm going to say it's going to last for probably about a year, and then I think people are going to say forget it.
He never made it. He never made it before.
I didn't make it before. I doubt it's going to make it again.
Not going to make it again. Yeah. All right. I guess they do need 52 titles.
They
right?
do, so, yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
Demon Knights, number one, Chris, written by Paul Cornell. And, oh, my God, art by...
Diogenes
Neves.
And Eau Claire Albert.
Right. Demon Knights. I've never read a Demon Knights.
No.
Is this the Kirby's Demon?
Well, it says here, set in the dark ages of the DC Universe, a barbarian horde is massing to crush civilization, and it's fallen onto Madame Xanadu and Jason Blood in order to stand in their way.
Okay, so it's Madame Xanadu vehicle.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And it'll be the Jason Blood demon.
Yeah, Etrigan. Etrigan the demon.
Yeah.
Right.
So
okay,
it's all about the demon.
And Demon and Madame Xanadu couldn't carry a title before.
No, they're just short-term books.
They're
I say nay.
Yeah. I say nay. Okay. Last one for today. We got Voodoo Number One by Ron Mars and with art and cover by Sammy Basri. I like Ron Mars. I think he did a great job on Silver Surfer years ago. Was that Ron Mars? No, it was Ron Lim. Sorry,
Ron Lim.
Okay. Ron Mars. He's done. I think he did some work on Spider-Man. Anyways,
yeah. Ron McLean I really like too. He does work. on Hockey Night in Canada.
Anyways, I do like Ron Mars. I know he did a lot of work for CrossGen too.
Right.
By the way, I do like his stuff on as a writer and.
But it's one of those things, Voodoo.
Yeah,
the character
I don't think
Voodoo.
It's gonna.
Voodoo's a dead issue, guys.
Yeah. She's not gonna make it.
They would have been.
No,
better.
They haven't done a Voodoo movie in how long?
Not since what was that one by John Carpenter, Serpent of the Rainbow?
Serpent and the Rainbow. I think that's about the last one I remember.
You know what? Sorry, it wasn't John Carpenter. Maybe it was.
It wasn't Carpenter.
No,
it was Wes Craven.
Wes Craven. That's it. Yeah. Anyways, I'm going to say no on this one.
No on that one. All right. So the dark, though, Chris, you and I have reviewed DC's dark little segment, and I think about half of them are going to make it. So.
Yeah, as far as that, and I think that's a pretty strong.
Right. For a non kind of traditional type of thing.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think the 52 titles have to continue. I think the 52 titles are important as the original salvo promotion. If they die off,
They'll just come up with other ones. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
Right. Right.
All right. Well, listen, that is all the time we've had for today. Vince, I do want to say thank you very much for coming on the show today. I hope you had a good time, and I hope you maybe even learned a little bit of something about comic books.
I did?
Probably not. Probably not. All right.
I learned that there's a great Fantastic Force theme from the 80s.
All right. Comic Culture is produced by Anthony Falcone and engineered by James McIntosh. For comments and suggestions, please visit comicbookdaily.com. Click on the podcast link and make your enter your comments in the comments field below.
Please go out and support your local comic book retailers. And remember, don't make us angry. You wouldn't like us when we're angry.
Yes, and support your local comic book store.